Greetings, everybody. Happy Tuesday. This is Patrick Foster, and you are listening to the Rock in the Suburbs podcast. It feels like the first episode of the week because it is, and I want to apologize to everybody for getting my days confused. I thought Saturday was Sunday, but you can blame that on the Premier League, and we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, on behalf of myself and my co-host and co-founder, Jim Linehan, I want to say happy Tuesday again to everybody, and thanks for listening. This is going to be an episode of What Was First? And I wanted to do today's episode on a topic that's been suggested now by three different people. So I want to thank Nick Scalera, who you might suspect would ask about this particular record label. Liam McIndoe. Thank you, Liam, very much. He sent in a nice list. And then another Nick. And this person's name is not Nick Optus, and I'm sorry for identifying him that way, but I did. And he responded and said, thanks for the great episode. And on Factory Records, that was one of his suggestions. And he wrote that, however, we're going to have to get something straight if you're going to credit me with the other two ideas eventually. Calling me Nick Optus is a bit like calling an American emailer Chuck Verizon. So I might be Nick Commonwealth Bank or Nick NRMA Insurance, or maybe not. They and Optus have more to do with inertia on my part than loyalty. So how about Nick REM, Nick Teenage Fan Club, or to close the loop, yours sincerely, Nick Factory Records. So that's what it's going to be. Our friend Nick Factory Records suggested this topic also. Thank you, buddy, and I'm sorry for that mix-up. I also want to thank Damon Wood, a longtime listener, apparently, and first-time emailer. He got in touch with two Canadian record labels to suggest, so I'm going to get right on those and get working on them. I know hardly anything about either label, so that'll be really interesting, too, for everybody, I hope. Today, folks, it's Flying Nun Records. Yes, 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 we had to do it eventually, right? You knew it was coming. It's a really good suggestion. Obviously, it's one of the most, if not the most influential label in my life. I know the other day I said that if someone forced me to get rid of all my records except for on one label, I said SST might be up there. And yeah, Flying Nun might be right up there too. It might just knock SST off the board, but hopefully it'll never happen. Anyway, listen, this is a really interesting story, and the good news about this is there's a lot of documentation about this story, and who better to turn to than the man who founded the label himself, Roger Shepherd. He's got a great book called In Love with These Times, My Life with Flying Nun Records. It's on the HarperCollins book imprint. It's really great. Go out there and get it if you can find it. All kinds of funny stories and great pictures and all that kind of stuff. He has a quote on the back that says, I wanted to be more than just an observer. I wanted to be a part of what was going on. I had told someone and the word was out. Now I actually had to do this thing, start a record label. Let's go to the story here. Let's go back, and I believe the year we're going to go back to is 1981. And we're going to turn to Roger's book here, The Great In Love With These Times. And I'm going to quote, he said, I had a more pressing concern. What do I call this record label I had decided to start? Naming things can be hard. Around and around it went. Christchurch Sounds, Square Records, Garden City Music, Round Records, Rock Art Music, Flat City Spinners maybe. It needed to be of that place, Christchurch in the South Island, and as well as universal, sophisticated, witty and modern, everyday yet memorable. It needed to be about the music, but more than just that. Flying Nun Records. I immediately regretted it. I'd settled on it under the duress of some imminent releases. I named it after a dire 1960s television series featuring a young Sally Field. Sometimes people would get confused and call it Blue Nun. It seemed rather apt to have your life's work confused with a cheap brand of mass-produced sweet German wine. But Flying Nun Records, it was silly and throwaway and didn't at all reflect how seriously I was taking the venture. What would everyone say? And then he goes on to say, I had seen a new band called The Pin Group. So there it is, folks. The first release on Flying Nun Records was The Pin Group. It was not The Clean. It was not any Tall Dwarfs or Chris Knox or anybody like that. It was actually The Pin Group. And Roger says, they approached me about releasing a single they'd recorded. Like me, the band's singer and guitarist, Roy Montgomery, had a day job managing a record shop. Cut it off at managing a record shop. Yeah, okay. The Pin Group were Roy on guitar and vocals, with Ross Humphreys on bass and Peter Buck Stapleton on drums. Peter had already been in bands such as The Vacuum and would later be part of many others, including Dotama, Scorched Earth Policy and the Terminals. He was a great hold-down-the-beat kind of drummer. Ross was a natural musician, a valued member of later Christchurch bands such as The Great Unwashed, Belter Space, and The Terminals. An eccentric friend, Desmond Bryce, wrote the lyrics. So the Pin Group had gone into a studio called Night Shift Studio and recorded a couple of songs. I believe they actually might have recorded four during that session. But the songs in question here are Ambivalence and Columbia. And Roger says, I'm not even sure I'd heard the recordings before agreeing to release them. I was more than happy to press them up as Flying Nun's first release. Roger went over to PolyGram Records, where he had a contact named Ziggy, sent the tape off to him, and they cut and pressed the record. All 12-inch record covers, Roger writes, were printed in advance, so the records could be sleeved as soon as they were cooled after pressing. The major record companies didn't print 7-inch covers for each individual release, instead using cheap generic sleeves pre-printed and ready to use. A local art student named Ronnie Van Hout did the covers, and he also took care of the printing himself. Perversely, the cover of the first single was not at all colorful, Roger writes. It was a beautiful black-on-black image, and it was only years later that I realized it was of helicopters. Helicopters in Vietnam. Black helicopters on black ops, I guess. So there it is, folks. Flying Nun 001. Now, another thing about Flying Nun that you folks might know, and they had a very unique numbering system, so it was not at all FN 001 all the way up through whatever. There was all kinds of different offshoots and different little tags they would use and different prefixes and all kinds of things. So chasing it all through is quite a project. But anyway, yeah, it was Ambivalence and Columbia were the two songs recorded at Night Shift Studios. And why don't we drop the needle on the first song, Ambivalence. So there it is, folks. Dark, unsettling a little bit, deliberately obscure, I think, was the approach of the Pin Group. You definitely hear the influence of that group from New York City with Cale and Tucker and Reed and Morrison. Later, the Pin Group would actually add a violin to their sound and even get a little more creaky like early Velvet Underground, too. But there's a site here, audioculture.co.nz, that has a lot of good information about New Zealand bands. And I just want to quote something here. Pin Group's first single, Ambivalence, back with Columbia, dispensed with information entirely. Its black on black Ronnie Van Hout screen printed cover and labels gave nothing away on the single's release in late 1981. The mystery deepened as the band routinely left their names off their record, so willfully obscure, without a doubt. And then a few months later, they released another 45 on Flying Nun, a song called Coat, backed with Jim. And unless I miss my guess, I believe they recorded those also at the same studio they recorded this first single. Both singles, it says, made the lower reaches of the New Zealand pop charts. Ambivalence peaked at number 36 in the New Zealand singles chart for a week in October 1981. And it says the follow-up, Coat, got to number 38. So top 40 hits, but just barely. And then they recorded an EP called The Pin Group Go to Town that's very good as well, and probably a little more realized, a little more recorded, probably a little bit better, but also the band obviously was evolving a little bit. As we said, Roy Montgomery, it was in mid-1982 when the group called it quits. Now, there's a great compilation on the Silk Breeze label out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and it collects everything, I'm pretty sure, that the Pin Group did. Holding it in my hands here. It's just called The Pin Group. It's on Silk Breeze Records. It's got some liner notes inside by Bruce Russell. And that's something you want to pick up, definitely. You want to find that. I want to tell you that on March 28th, the copy was sold on Discogs, and that went for $1,400. So that was a near-mint copy for $1,400. So it's definitely not an item that's going to come cheap if you want to add it to your collection. It's a little bit unclear how many copies of this were made, but it does. There is a note here on Discogs. The excellent collector site says leftover original discs were sold with plain black sleeves in the late 80s or early 90s. So there may be some discs that were pressed up that didn't have sleeves for them. It was also reissued a couple of times on the Flying Nun label, again with a black sleeve, and then there's another reissue with a blue sleeve. Seemed to be a little harder to come by. They haven't changed hands. And then it was reissued in the United States in 2017 on the Superior Viaduct label. May have to learn more about that. There are copies of this one for sale out there at an affordable price. So there it is, folks. The short-lived Pin Group. Apparently, they played less than 15 live concerts in their existence. They were together for a little over a year and a half, and written in the history books for being the first band to release a record on Flying Nun Records, FN001, and it only got better from there, of course. And I want to encourage you guys to go all the way back in the Suburbs Pod archives, rewind all the way until April 2018, episode 330, when Flying Nun Week began. Start there. Nick Scalera, of course, an excellent Flying Nun scholar, joined me, and we went through the Flying Nun stuff, and we actually did Flying Nun Week 2, and there's a lot of Flying Nun content on Suburbs Pod. Just go to our website, suburbspod.com, and type in Flying Nun in the big search box, and you'll get all the juicy content there. Okay, well, thank you very much, folks, for listening. We are going to play out today with the second song, Columbia, and coming up tomorrow, hopefully, or the next day, something completely different will await you, and hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. My name is Patrick Foster. Thank you for listening to Rock in the Suburbs. If you want to get in touch with an idea for What Was First series, or just to anything, if you want to complain about me screwing up, feel free to do so. Just email rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on the social medias at suburbspod. On behalf of my co-host and co-founder and good friend Jim Linehan, I'm Patrick Foster. This is Rock in the Suburbs. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Rewind, rewind, keep rewinding, keep rewinding, rewind.